The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. So I was very amused by everything that's going on around President Joe Biden. I know it's nothing to do with what we need to talk about, but you know, we were talking about him looking very, very sleepy at the meeting
with dead.
Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. Well, apparently when he woke up and he had to look at his watch to see what time it was, then that's also not okay, because that was just at the moment that caskets of the slain American soldiers were being brought off the plane, and lots and lots of cries of dishonor and disrespect being leveled at President Joe Biden. It seems at the moment like he can't do anything right. But what is right or very interesting is that over the last two or three days, the demand for airplane tickets in Israel has suddenly and dramatically increased. And that is because the authorities have decided to release people who've had three vaccinations from the necessity to do a quarantine when they return from abroad. We're talking about Israeli citizens now who travel abroad. Up until now, the last few weeks at least, the last month or so, there's been a requirement for everybody returning from abroad to go into at least a week of quarantine upon their return. That requirement has been released now, and massive demand in airplane tickets. Everybody is rushing to use the holiday periods to go abroad and not have to come back to quarantine, assuming, of course, that they've had their third vaccination. And the big day finally arrived for Israeli school children. The schools will open today, I'm reliably told, after will they and will they not, and lots of vacillation backwards and forwards about what the rules are going to be. The schools are open. 2.5 million Israeli school children will go to school today. Some of them remote learning, some of them online learning, some of them face-to-face, some of them outside but nearby somewhere, lots and lots of different constellations. It's usually a day where we concentrate on what we loosely term in Israel, Shalom Kita Aleph, the day that grade one children finally make it to the big school and they get to go to grade one. This is so much less about Shalom Kita Aleph this year and so much more about, have you got your antigen test? Have you had your vaccination? Do you have your mask? Bring all your information with you in order to be allowed into the school, in order to allow the assessment of what your current corona status is. That's really what the focus is. But the schools are finally open. I've been reliably told that there are not six learning days in September, as I've been stating up until now, and which seems to be widely stated in the press as well. Apparently, there are nine learning days in September for those who don't go to school on Friday. And for those who do go to school on Friday, apparently 12 school days during the month of September. So not quite as bad as we originally had been led to believe. But let's hope that it will be a successful academic year for our school children and for their parents.
Absolutely.
Because I know that a lot of them are very relieved to see the school gates going open today.
Look, more important, I think, than anything is that these kids have a normal year of childhood and that they don't lose the year the way many of the kids have lost over the last 2 years. So that is really my wish for them. Israel, however, has reached a new record of corona infections in a single day.
Yes, almost 11,000 new infections of the coronavirus. And in fact, quite a notorious world position, because Israel is now at the top of the list of the number of corona infections in one day per capita in the world. Country in the world
it just makes has no,
more
nothing
diagnosed.
Makes any sense. It's crazy.
Right. So let's try and make some sense of all of this, because it is really crazy. Mm. Okay. On the one hand, we say Israel is one of the most vaccinated countries in the world, which it is at the moment. More than 2 million people have already received three doses of the vaccine. 5.9 million people have received at least one dose of the vaccine. So a very, very substantial number of people who have been vaccinated in Israel. And in spite of that fact, we have this massive, massive increase in the number of new diagnoses, and a concern that opening the school gates is going to make that even worse moving forward over the next few weeks. The pleasing thing, which we are looking at is, in fact, the number of people who are seriously ill and who are hospitalized. Now, the last time that Israel exceeded 10,000 new cases in one day was back in January. I think it was January the 18th or thereabouts. And at that time, we had approximately twice the number of people who were seriously ill than we have now. And also, the number of deaths that we were suffering at that time from corona-related issues was almost twice the number that we're experiencing now. So what we, I think, can conclude from our situation is, one, that even with two vaccinations, you are not immune from catching new variants of corona, especially when a certain period of time has passed since you've been vaccinated. The vaccinations are not effective on an ongoing basis for an extended period of time, and that unfortunately we're going to have to get used to the idea of being boosted and revaccinated in order to keep our antibody levels higher so that we can potentially fight against being infected. The second thing that we can learn is that even though people are being infected, those who have been vaccinated are far less affected by the virus than people who have not been vaccinated. That is an ongoing theme that we see everywhere. People who are showing positive tests and who've been vaccinated are generally less unwell. They generally can cope with the situation. Even people who potentially fall into high risk groups cope with the virus a lot better than people who've not been vaccinated. The number of people who are requiring hospital treatment, the number of people who are seriously ill requiring ventilation, and of course the number of people who are dying is much, much lower in the vaccinated group. Even those whose vaccinations are potentially a little older, and they are still in a better position to fight off the virus than people who are not vaccinated. That is the general principle. But of course, the headline that Israel, the most vaccinated country in the world, is also on the top of the list of the number of new infections, clearly feeds the anti-vax campaign. People will be using that everywhere. But I think we need to just be a little bit cautious about listening only to the headline and not understanding a little bit more about the detail that goes on beyond that headline.
I think that is absolutely right. It's something that we have to keep remembering, and that's why, as well, I mentioned a little bit earlier some research out of Houston, where they show the number of serious illnesses with regard to vaccinated and unvaccinated people. The first ever Bahrainian ambassador to Israel has arrived to take up his post.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very substantial day, a very big day that happened yesterday. The first ever Bahraini ambassador arrived. This is Khaled Al-Jalama, who arrived yesterday and was met with foreign ministry officials upon his arrival. Bahrain entered into the so-called Abraham Accords, a peace agreement with Israel, back last year in September. So it's taken a little bit of time to finally get the moment for the exchange of ambassadors. And of course, once the ambassador has already arrived, the formal opening of the embassy, even though the opening of the embassy has already been in train for some time, embassy both here in Israel and of course an Israeli embassy in Bahrain. But I think that this is a momentous occasion, and I think there's a lot of cooperation that could potentially happen between Israel and Bahrain. We've already seen the UAE, the United Arab Emirates ambassador, taking up his position a little while ago, and now the Bahraini ambassador alongside. And the extent of the friendship that has developed between Israel and the Abraham Accord countries in the last year or two since we've started entering into these peace arrangements and since the diplomacy has been put in place has been phenomenal. You know, when we see the amount of tourism backwards and forwards between the Israel and the various countries that we've now entered into peace agreements with, and when we see the trade beginning to tick up, so much common interest technology development, lots and lots of trade opportunities, lots and lots of business cooperation. It's really been quite amazing to see, because the previous peace agreements that Israel has entered into, the ones that we can remember and you know, which have been around for a while, the peace agreement with Egypt and with Jordan, those ones in particular, were not nearly as substantial and as warm as these peace agreements. And I think I've said this before, but I think the fact that these Abraham Accord countries, and, you know, I'm just using a loose term, but I think listeners will understand what I mean. The Abraham Accord countries are not countries that border on Israel. And the moment we remove that border significance and the potential conflict that exists on the border, I think it creates a whole different nature of a relationship. And the fact is that these countries were supporting effectively the countries that were on the border, and therefore those diplomatic relations historically were not possible. Now that those countries along the border have reached their agreement with Israel and have a long established peace treaty, albeit not a peace treaty that's particularly warm. We don't see the massive tourism backwards and forwards. We don't see the huge amount of trade backwards and forwards. But there certainly is trade that goes on, and there certainly is an element of tourism that goes on. And perhaps more importantly, or most importantly, there is security cooperation. And we can't underestimate the value of that, because that just removes the war situation. So even if the peace means no more war and nothing else, it's been very much worthwhile. But now that we've moved into a new era, and we have ambassadors from Bahrain now and from the United Arab Emirates, and potentially Morocco, and, you know, other countries, Sudan, countries that have normalized their ties with Israel over the last year or two, those countries, I think, are going to have an entirely different relationship when we remove this border issue. And Israelis are very enthusiastic about developing ties with those countries. And we actually see the same in return, even though it might be a little bit more reluctant. But there's definitely a two-way street, and definitely a mirror image of the enthusiasm that goes on between the two countries.
It's, I mean, when we look back, we just can't imagine that this would have even been a reality. I can't, and I know it's been more than a year now, or I think almost now about, it's a year, but it's just so remarkable to think that had we cast ourselves back just 2 years, we would not have imagined that peace with these countries would have been a reality. And it just shows you how much is possible. And how much is achievable with peace?
Yeah. The thing that's so inbuilt into my mind, and which I struggle to come to terms with, is that when you look at possible flights that you might make around the world, Emirates as an airline and Dubai as a hub has really cemented its place in the world of travel. And to Israelis, that route has never really been available up until now. And yet, when I think about the possibility of traveling somewhere and using a hotspot somewhere to make a connection, Dubai is definitely not on the list of places that I give consideration to. Even, for example, travel to South Africa, there are a lot of flights that come through Dubai, and that could potentially be a very easy way.
It could be a phenomenal route. I recall being in Israel a number of times, and I had to fly to Mauritius on business. And the only way, or the quickest way for me to do it, was to fly from Tel Aviv to Amman in Jordan, then Jordan to Dubai, Dubai to Mauritius, because there was no chance you couldn't fly from Tel Aviv to Dubai.
No, you couldn't then. Now, of course, it's available, and Dubai is an amazing connection point to travel anywhere around the world. They've really done a massive job, both of the airport and the airline, to create that position. It's not the first thing that comes to mind, and yet for people elsewhere around the world, particularly European, African travelers, Dubai is very much one of the first possible locations. I mean, Turkey has also created a great hub spot in Istanbul, a great new airport and a good airline, and they are certainly a possibility. But Dubai and Emirates is really a fantastic option that's available. And I'm still struggling to put that into my force of reckoning and into my thought process to consider it to be a viable option for us.
Incredible. And finally, Israel has won two more swimming medals in the Paralympic Games in Tokyo.
Yeah, the medals just keep coming, and it's, you know, just a fantastic achievement by our Paralympic swimming team in particular, though we've also had a rowing medal, and we spoke about that the other day. But two swimmers that we've already discussed who are already medal winners at this year's Tokyo Olympic Games, Ami Omer Dadaon. He won a silver medal previously in the 150-meter individual medley. He is now a gold medal winner in the men's 200 freestyle. And Mark Mallier, who broke a world record, and he broke an Olympic record in two different events, in an individual medley event and in a freestyle event, has now won bronze medal in the women, in the men's, 100 meter backstroke. So all in all, seven gold medals so far from the Paralympic Games in Tokyo. Four of them, we heard Hatikva played in the hallowed Olympic halls, at the swimming pool in particular, four swimming gold medals. And, you know, I just say again what I said previously, and I apologize to those people who feel that this is repetition, but I can't emphasize enough the importance of how their therapy that they received as disabled people to try to give them just basic skills to strengthen their bodies in some way, just in the most basic way, has then led them to become world-class athletes, moving from the hydrotherapy pools through to getting them strong enough and trained enough and able enough to participate in these international events. And I should add that our swimmers, although some of them are winning Olympic medals for the first time, have all been medal winners at international swimming events in the past, world championships, all in the Paralympic area. So really a fantastic performance by the swimming team, and great credit to the hydrotherapy programs around Israel, and in particular the one in Haifa, which has come out so strongly as such a strong supporter of these swimmers. Well done to all of them, and brought immense pride to Israel.
Absolutely.
And to hear Hatikva played at the games is just fantastic.
It is indeed. It's gone 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time at 7:45.